want to say a word before I offer a prayer this morning. My family and I were in South Dakota this past week, which is awesome. It's where my wife's family lives, and we had a beautiful time. It was cold. It was real cold. 18 degrees a couple of days were the high. I was not prepared for that, friends. So I am grateful for the weather that's here today. I'm also grateful to Marcella for offering an important word last week. I just want to tell you, when I'm not here, I miss you. Like, I really do. We woke up Sunday morning, and Susan said, are you going to watch worship today? And I said, I'm not, because it's good for my soul every once in a while to take a step back, but I miss you. And I think about you, and I'm so grateful for you. So I just wanted to offer that word before I offer a prayer this morning. God, I pray that in this moment when so much is going on in the world, God, when things are really challenging for a lot of people, locally, nationally, internationally, God, I pray that somehow we could pause our minds this morning and you would meet us here. God, that you would call us to live a life that's different. Somehow you would open our minds to understand new things. You'd open our ears to hear what you want us to hear, that our hearts might be transformed to create a bigger table in our own lives and across the world. In Jesus' name, amen. I want to do something I think I've done three times in my entire time of being a pastor. I want to read you a children's book this morning to start the message. And this is a book by Trudy Ludwig. It's called The Invisible Boy. And I don't know if you've heard of this book. I remember we used to read it to our children. It's one of the most beautiful stories. And I think this sets up our conversation really well as we kick off this series today. So you're going to be able to see the pages on the screen, but I'm going to read the book as if I were reading it to my own children when they were little. So let's go to the first page. It says, can you see Brian, the invisible boy? Even Miss Carlotti has trouble noticing him in her classroom. She's too busy dealing with Nathan and Sophie. Nathan has problems with what Miss Carlotti calls volume control. He uses his outside voice inside too much. Sophie whines and complains when she doesn't get her way. I love how Sophie's just like this. Whines and complains when she doesn't get her way. Nathan and Sophie take up a lot of space. Brian doesn't. When the bell rings for recess, Micah and JT take turns choosing kids for the kickball teams. The best players get picked first, then the best friends of the best players, then the friends of the best friends. Only Brian is left, still waiting and hoping. JT glances in Brian's direction and just as quickly looks away. We've got enough players for each team, he tells the others. Let's play ball. In the cafeteria, Madison and her friends talk about her birthday party. The rope swing over the pool was awesome, says JT. Yeah, so was the water slide, adds Fiona. That was the best pool party ever. I'm so glad you had fun, says Madison. Everybody did except Brian. He wasn't invited. At choosing time, while the other kids play board games and read, Brian sits at his table doing what he loves to do best. He draws fire-breathing dragons scaling tall buildings, space aliens locked in intergalactic battles, greedy pirates digging for treasure, and superheroes with the power to make friends wherever they go. On Monday morning, Mrs. Carlotti introduces Justin, a new student, to the class. Brian smiles shyly at him. Some of the other kids sneak looks at Justin, trying to figure out if he's cool enough to be their friend. They haven't quite made up their minds yet. At lunch, Madison and JT watch Justin eat with chopsticks. What's that? Asks Madison as she points to Justin's food. It's bulgogi. But what? Bulgogi, it's Korean barbecued beef. My grandma made it for me. It's really good. Do you want to try some? There's no way I'm eating boogergi. And the kids laugh. All of them. That is, except Brian. He sits there wondering which is worse, being laughed at or feeling invisible. The next day, when Justin goes to his cubby to put away his backpack, he notices a piece of paper with his name on it. Justin, I thought the bulgogi looked good. Brian, yum. At morning recess, Brian finds a piece of chalk on the ground and starts drawing away. You're Brian, right? Yeah. Thanks for the note. Hey, Justin, Emilio calls out from the tetherball court. You're up next. Sorry, I gotta go, says Justin. By the way, that's a really cool drawing, he adds before taking off. Back in class, Mrs. Carlotti asks the kids to team up in twos or threes for a special project. The kids scurry around the room to pair off. Brian heads toward Justin. I'm already with Justin, says Emilio. Find someone else. Brian looks to the floor, wishing he could draw a hole right there to swallow him up. Mrs. Carlotti said we can have up to three people in our group. We're only two. Come on, Emilio. Let him work with us. Okay, I guess. Mrs. Carlotti gives the class directions for the project. Your assignment is to work together to write a story about what you see in that photograph. Use your imagination and have fun. Whoa, cool, says Emilio. What kind of people do you think would live in houses like that? I don't know, but I bet Brian could draw them to go with our story, says Justin. Brian smiles as he takes out his lucky pen. The crooked story we made up on the Spox. It's lunchtime again, Brian's least favorite part of the day. Another 20 long minutes of kids talking and laughing with everyone else but him. Brian, he hears someone shout. Hey, Brian, over here. Brian turns and sees Justin waving him over. Emilio nods at Brian as he makes room for him at the table. Cookie? Thanks. Maybe, just maybe, Brian's not so invisible after all. Come on, isn't that a great story? Don't you all want to go read it to your kids? I mean, how many folks in the world are invisible? How many people do you walk around and you walk in a store and they just go right past you and they're never seen? I've had people tell me that no one says their name in an entire week. Not one person. How many people feel invisible? This week in worship, we're starting a new series. The series is called A Bigger Table. See, we're heading into these seasons of Thanksgiving and Christmas. For some of you, I just made your heart start pounding a little faster. Don't worry, Costco did that about a month ago, right? As they brought the trees out. As soon as the Halloween stuff started getting sparse, Walmart filled all the shelves with Christmas. It's like Thanksgiving isn't a real holiday, right? But the truth is, the holidays are coming and they cause a lot of stress. I gotta get all things perfect. I gotta get all things done. I saw someone on Facebook who had a countdown to Christmas saying they were already listening to Christmas music. And I just wanna tell you, there is no judgment from me on this. I love Christmas music. I can't start too early. I have not started yet. But the concept of a bigger table is sometimes a tricky one because a bigger table invites people who are different sometimes than you. A bigger table creates space for more people. But in order for a bigger table to happen, you've got to move some things. If you want the actual physical table to be bigger, you've got to move some furniture. If you want more seats at the table, you've got to ask other folks to move down. Maybe you've got to move stuff away. Susan and I, it was really my fault, just recently watched Gilmore Girls again. The whole stinking series. In the fall, I feel like everybody should watch Gilmore Girls in the fall. It's like designed for that. But then we went on to watch Gilmore Girls, A Day in the Life or A Year in the Life, which is the little stinking four episode series after the series, where we want more. And in it, they talked about Marie Kondo, and I was reminded of her. You remember Marie Kondo? Oh man, she was big for a while. Young Japanese woman, she encouraged people to get rid of stuff. She had a way that she talked about that you hold something up and you see if it gives you joy. And if it doesn't give you joy, you get rid of it. And then later she had kids. And she realized it's not quite that easy. But she still lives into this practice of holding things up and seeing if they give you joy. Today we're going to look at a passage in the Gospel according to Luke chapter 10. I want us, as we read this passage, to think about the reality of what's going on in this story. It'll be tempting for us, and I've done it myself, to read this story and think that Jesus is rebuking someone. Think that he's going after someone for the way that they're living in this moment, but I think all Jesus is doing is longing for her to have more. I don't think he's rebuking her. I don't think that's what's happening in this situation, and we'll get there. I think Jesus wants us to do the Marie Kondo method with people, to hold people up in our lives and say, how does this person bring me joy? to hold people up and say, how can I make more space for this person because of the joy that they bring me? So I want to look at Luke chapter 10, verses 38 to 42. It says, while Jesus and his disciples were traveling, Jesus entered a village where a woman named Martha welcomed him as a guest. She had a sister named Mary who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to his message. By contrast, Martha was preoccupied with getting everything ready for their meal. So Martha came to him and said, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to prepare the table all by myself? Tell her to help me. That's a bold thing to tell Jesus, right? Tell her to help me. The Lord answered, Martha, Martha, you are worried and distracted by many things. One thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the better part. It won't be taken away from her. Now think about this for a moment. It doesn't tell us that Jesus had phoned ahead and said, I'm coming. It doesn't tell us that months ago they had sent out an invite for Jesus and he had RSVP'd yes and he was coming. It says Jesus and the disciples walked into this town and Martha steps out of the house and says, Jesus, come in. Come in. We want you to have a meal with us, which means it probably also included Jesus's friends. They made space and they made room at the table. She welcomed him as a guest. What does that mean? It means Martha wanted him to have the very best experience. If you are anything like me, my wife tells me that sometimes when we're preparing for guests, I get a little crazy because I want everything to be just right. I want to make sure there's toilet paper in the bathroom because, right? I want to make sure that we have the drinks that people like, the food that people like. I want to make sure the house is clean. I want to make sure things are neat. If there's a possibility someone's coming by, and I got this, Mom, if you're watching, I got this from you. Because my mom's house was always ready for anybody. It was not unusual at all for another friend to stop over and sit at the table. Last night in our home, we were about to have dinner. My wife had been gone all day. She took Jackson and Sarah to JMU to start looking at schools. And she got back and the kids had friends over. And she said, how many of your friends are staying for dinner? We just expanded the table. Put the food out, right? And that's what happens when you have guests, and that's what Martha's doing here. Now, next, Mary begins to swoon, right? What do I mean by that? She just wants to sit at the feet of Jesus. She's like, Martha can do all the work. I'm gonna sit here and just be with Jesus. Now, could you imagine, even I, somebody who likes to be prepared, if Jesus were sitting in my house, I may just stop and sit with him. I may stop and listen. I may stop and say, what in the world is he saying in this moment? I may do it. And that's what Mary does. It's something in my life that I recognize I need to do more, friends. When I have people around me, I need to stop, not just physically, but I need to stop this thing. I need to stop thinking about my to-do list. I need to stop thinking about all the other things that are coming up. I need to stop thinking about how if I listen to this person for 20 minutes, it's gonna take me longer to do what I need to do. And listen, in my work, I do this regularly. I sit with people and I fully listen. But my question is, do I do it with my family? When my kids come home at the end of the day, do I actually listen to what they say or do I kind of scurry them on? If a friend calls me, do I listen to what my friend says or do I think, all right, if I do 15 minutes on this phone call, what's it gonna do the rest of my day? I think I need to stop and pause and make space more to listen more. But let's go back to the story. Where is Martha in this moment? She was the one that welcomed Jesus, right? The scripture says Martha steps out and welcomes him as a guest, but she seems to have now stepped away. What does it say? It says, by contrast, Martha was preoccupied with getting everything ready for their meal. So Martha came to him and said, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to prepare the table all by myself? Tell her to help me. Martha says, Jesus, doesn't it bother you that Mary's doing nothing? Doesn't it bother you that Mary is lazy? Okay, this could be a conversation at any point in time in our home. One of our kids could say, Mom and Dad, doesn't it bother you that that person's not doing dishes? Or they could say, Mom and Dad, we know you cooked all the dinner, but it doesn't seem fair that we have to do the dishes. Doesn't it bother you that? And they might not use those exact words, but it happens. And sometimes I do that with Susan, and sometimes she does it with me. Doesn't it bother you that someone's resting? Doesn't it bother you that someone's taking care of themselves and listening? But how does Jesus respond? What does Jesus say? It says, the Lord answered, Martha, Martha. And it's all in how you read this, friends. Martha, Martha, you're worried and you're distracted by many things. One thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the better part. It won't be taken away from her. I have heard people preach this passage, and I have heard people read this passage, and they've read it in an angry tone. Remember, Jesus is a guest. Jesus is probably tired, and he's been invited into a home. Some could argue that he's mad at Martha, that she's doing the wrong thing. I don't think that's what's going on. I don't think he's actually mad at her. I actually think if you read this within the context of the greater context of the gospel according to Luke, you recognize that Jesus knows somebody had to prepare the food. They had to eat, right? Somebody has to prepare for dinner. Here's what I think is going on here. I think Jesus is longing for Martha to treasure people. I think Jesus is longing for Martha's cup to be filled by others. I think Jesus knows the hole that each of us have for connection and community. And he wants Martha to be able to fill that hole for people. I think he longs for something more. He wants her to build a bigger table. He wants her to sit at the table. It's one thing to invite somebody to your house. It's another thing to engage them, to learn their story, to connect with them. He wants her to treasure people. So how do we make room for other people in our lives? You know, we say we're a church that's about all people. I said it in the beginning. We're a church that's about welcoming all people. How do we live into that in practice? How do we create space in our own lives? How do you create space for your family? Come on, y'all know it. Those of you who are spending Thanksgiving with family, you know that one person who you'd probably rather not sit beside, right? You know that that conversation's going to happen at Christmas, or maybe it won't, because your family has discerned that you can't be together. You may also know that one person who's at work who doesn't have any family around and who isn't going anywhere for Thanksgiving or Christmas, and you've never necessarily listened to the nudge to just invite them over. What does it look like to create space as people who call ourselves followers of Jesus to create space for others? How do we live into that unlimited welcome practically in each of our own lives? Friends, as we enter this season of Thanksgiving and Christmas, things are going to get more busy. You have to discern what is your treasure. What is the thing that you're going to spend your energy on? One of the reasons that I love the story of the invisible boy is that it identifies how we can treasure others, but also how they can become our treasure, how we can become their treasure. Did you see what happened in that story? Did you see how the drawings made him more colorful as time came on? How he showed up, how he brightened up because others loved him and others started to include him? Marie Kondo's method, which to some seems to have fallen by the wayside, is very much interested in people living lives that are decluttered, able to see and think clearly about things that matter most. This is why when we talk about a bigger table, we talk about it because it means we have to get rid of some things. Sometimes the more people that sit around our table means we have to take off the centerpiece. Sometimes it means that we use the smaller plates so that more people can fit around. We have to think about spending our emotional energy on people. We have to think about how we make room for people in our lives, how we pursue people, how we get them to spark joy in us. How do we hold people up? How do we figuratively, you probably don't want to go around and just pick people up in stores. How do we figuratively pick people up and say, you bring me joy and you matter to my life? And how do we bring joy to them in doing that? I suggest that we, in this season, we the people, we call ourselves the church, as individual families and as a community, that we together endeavor to seek experiences and moments that bring joy to ourselves and to others around us. This season, many of us have Christmas lists, shopping lists, to-do lists. It's the only way we can make it through. I want to encourage you this year to create a joy list. You have a paper in your worship guide, if you got one today, called a joy list. And we're going to do something with it in just a few minutes. I want you to write names of people on your joy list, not Christmas presents, not things you got to do, like bake all the Christmas cards. I want you to write names of people. Don't do it yet. Some of you are tempted. You're already writing a name. Don't do it yet. I'm not judging you. But here's the deal, friends. In order to actually practice this, we have to create space for it. In order to do it, we have to write it down. In order to move into creating more joy in our lives by encouraging and engaging other people, we have to put their names on a list and we have to look at it regularly. Before communion today, I'm going to invite you to take some time to write the names. If you're here with other people, if you're here with friends, if you're here with your family, you're going to have some time to kind of talk to them and say, who do we want to put on our list? What names do we want on there? We had a situation happen in our neighborhood about a year ago. It was probably about a year ago right now. Somebody came to the door and I did not recognize this person, and they had a flyer in their hand, and I was like, awesome. They want me to vote for somebody, or they want to sell me something. Something I don't need, I'm sure. And they rang the doorbell, and I went to the door, and I opened the door, and it was one of our neighbors. Lived a couple of houses down. And it was an invitation. It was an invitation for Black Friday morning to come and have brunch at their house. We didn't know them. We hadn't met them yet. We were still fairly new to our neighborhood. And we didn't know, were we the only people that got the invitation, or were there multiple families that got the invitation? So we did what we should do. We replied, okay, we'll come. We were going to skip Black Friday shopping, which I hate, by the way, Black Friday shopping. So we were going to skip Black Friday shopping, and we were going to go to this brunch. And I have to tell you, I think I probably pushed my family a little bit to do this. All five of us. I think there was a really important football game that day between UVA and Virginia Tech, which if you follow those two teams this year, it won't be an important game this year because we're both terrible. But there was an important game, and we said, all right, we'll go. So fast forward, it's the day after Thanksgiving. I think we remembered Thanksgiving Day. Oh, we have this brunch tomorrow. And we showed up at the house, and I believe we were the very first people. Correct me if I'm wrong. We were the very first people at the house. That was fun, right? First people to show up. And they weren't quite ready, but they had left a sign on their door that said, come on in. So we were hoping this was the right house, right? And we come in, and nobody's there. But they heard us, and they came downstairs. And I think we were the only family that got the tour of their entire house. Because I have a tendency to show up right on time to things. But then family after family after family in our neighborhood showed up. And I would guess there were 30 or 40 people easily that were sitting around the table. And we got to know different families in our neighborhood, and I got to know their kids, and they got to know our kids. So now, when I walk around the neighborhood, I talk to other neighbors. I talk to other families. I ask them how they're doing. They ask me how my kids are. Some of them now have asked our kids to babysit their kids. What that family did was they expanded their table. And what they said was, we're some of the original owners that live here, and we want to know all the new neighbors that live here. Can you imagine how different our world would be if every neighborhood did that? How different might Ashburn be, Loudoun County, Fairfax County, if we said, all right, one day all of us are just going to send a flyer around to our neighborhood and invite all the families to create a bigger table. Friends, it's likely that we missed some shopping deals that day. I don't care. We didn't miss connecting with our neighbors. I have deeper relationships now with people around me because people chose to create a bigger table. Soon we're going to have the opportunity to do something in this church we call Bells and Lights. And that's an opportunity where you can spread joy to children in our greater community by buying Christmas gifts for them. And I love that we do this, and we are a very generous church, and we do really wonderful things. I want to encourage you to add something to that process this year. I want to encourage you to take the tag and hold it in your hand and pray for that person. You're not going to know their name, but you'll know their age, usually their gender, something like that. And I want you to pray for them, and I want them to bring you joy. And I want you to pray for joy in their lives. I want to invite you to go beyond just buying a gift for them. Maybe do that with a Thanksgiving basket. What if, as you filled your Thanksgiving basket this year, you prayed for the family that would eat out of it? And you allowed that to bring you joy. If we want to create a bigger table, we have to intentionally create space for people. We have to intentionally create space for people who are different from us. My longing for you as your pastor is that this season is different for you. That it's less about making sure you get everything perfectly decorated. It's less about making sure that you get every gift for every person. It's less about making sure that you get your Christmas cards out early, although we will in my house. And it's more about people. It's more about engaging the gifts that God has put in front of you. I wonder, can you make Thanksgiving a time of gratitude this year instead of a time of stress? Can you make the season leading up to Christmas a time to make room for people you want to show love and figure out how to do that in the limited time you have available? Can you make room at Christmas to bless your community, to do good, to transform lives, to give thanks to God for the wondrous birth of Jesus? Can you do that? Because to do that, I think we have to pause a little bit. To do that, we have to create space. There are some folks on the team who are going to come up. And they're going to sing a song. And I invite you, it's okay. I mean, this is a beautiful song with great words. But I invite you during this song, it's okay if you need to say some words to your person who came with you. I want to invite you to fill out your joy list. Who's going to go on it? Who are you going to put on it? What names are sparking joy in you? If you fill out that whole list, that's awesome. If you put three names, that's better than you had when you came here. Who's going to bring you joy this Christmas, and how are you going to make room for them at a bigger table?